This spoiler-filled podcast is recorded live, unscripted, and intended for those over 18. Now prepare your ears for the audio stimulation they've been waiting for all day as we step into
the spoiler room.
And we are live here for another episode of The Spoiler Room. This is becoming almost a weekly thing. It's a little unusual. And tonight I've got a fantastic crew to sit and talk about the film. It's finally on Netflix streaming, though many of us have seen it already. And we are talking about the action retro thriller Turbo Kid. And tonight in the room to help me talk about Turbo Kid, we have first the diva of The Spoiler Room herself, Dawn. Hello, Dawn.
Hello, Mark. Hello, gentlemen.
Hello.
Always glad to have you in the room tonight. Thanks so much for coming and talking about this. And next to her is the one and only BFD, Glenn Bittner. Hello, sir.
Hello.
Are you ready to talk about some 80s throwback?
My whole life is an 80s throwback, so this is right in my wheelhouse.
Awesome. Well, glad to have you. And next to him is our bow tie man himself, the ferret of the spoiler room, just because that's the picture that he has up. It's the one and only Mr. Paul Salzar. Hello, Paul.
Hello. How are you tonight?
I'm doing well. Glad you could be in here. Oh, we're getting just a little feedback here.
I thought somebody was blowing on a bottle or something.
It almost sounded like it.
It's the musical accompaniment of the evening.
Music accompaniment.
That was my phone. Telling me that somebody replied to a Twitter comment.
That may have been me.
Twitter. That's so like today. You do hear that distinctive laugh, that fantastic voice. It's the man himself, Scotty D. Hello, Scott.
Hey, I've got my gnome stick here, and I'm ready for battle. Looking forward to this.
Fantastic. Well, yes, tonight I had to get the group together once I saw that it hit Netflix streaming because I saw this film a while ago, and man, it's just there's so much that you can talk about this film. And to the summary on IMDb for Turbo Kid, for those few on the interwebs who have not heard about it, it's set in a post-apocalyptic wasteland. A comic book fan dons the persona of his favorite hero to save his enthusiastic friend and fight a tyrannical overlord. That has got to be probably the best synopsis on IMDb, like, ever. Because that sums up the very basic plot of this movie, but there is just so much more going on to this film, and it kind of fits in. What kind of triggered this discussion was last week we talked, if in case you missed it, it's in the archive, homage versus ripoff, and Turbo Kid is, I can probably safely say, an homage to the 80s apocalyptic film. Dawn, we'll start with you. Would you say that Turbo Kid kind of embodies that homage? What was your feelings when you first saw this film?
I loved it. It has the feel. It is an 80s movie done currently and done so right, down to the casting of Michael Ironside as the villain. I mean, when I saw that, I was in Space Hunter again.
Yes.
Overdog. Yes. Yeah. There are a number of things that they do right, and we will definitely touch on all of those things tonight, at least some of them, especially one particular thing. But let's get to Glenn, too. Glenn, when you first saw this, would you say homage film, and what were your feelings on it after you first saw it?
Definitely homage film, and my feelings were, as I stated in my review, this it totally took me back to the 80s, because this movie is Mad Max meets Legend of Zelda.
That's good.
That's really well put. I enjoy that. That's a perfect description, actually. That should be on their poster. Paul, what about you, sir?
Well, I think it is an homage film to my childhood, actually. And when I actually went into this film, I thought I wasn't going to like it. I didn't know that much about the film. But then as I started watching the beginning of it, I was like, oh no, this is going to be one of those type of stories that I'm not liking. And then suddenly the story just clicked in for me, and I suddenly like felt, like I said, this is an homage to my childhood. Felt like I was watching Witch Mountain or, you know, Terabithia.
Yeah,
that's what I felt like as I was watching this film. So it was like I felt like a kid again, and that was, you know, I don't get to do that very often, especially with a superhero film.
It's very few films nowadays actually make you feel like that, but they are out there, and this is definitely one of them. Scotty D, how about your reaction to this, and would you agree with everyone? It's homage?
Yeah, it's a total homage, but it's done right. It's you know, we see a lot of, and I'm going to mention some filmmakers here that some of you guys might like, some of our audience might like, but like you see a lot of these kind of throwbacks, the films that kind of pretend to be throwbacks to this other time. Like I'm thinking specifically of Astron 6,
mm-hmm.
but there's lots of other different ones too. And Astron 6 makes films, of course. They made Man Borg, they made The Editor, and Father's Day and stuff. And I always kind of get the idea from their films that, no, this it actually kind of doesn't quite feel like it. And even when it does, it kind of feels like the only way, they're suggesting the only way that you can enjoy a type of film like this is to actively laugh at it instead of laughing along with it. This is a film that has just enough retro feel, but doesn't overdo it so that it does feel like a new movie as well. It feels new and old at the same time, and plus, it's taking the audience on this great ride. So it has all the, you know, the kind of the whimsical fun about this type of film, while telling its own story, not relying too much on the nostalgia, and it comes out with a much better attitude, a lot, and winds up being a lot more pure than so many of these other filmmakers, not just Astron 6, but a lot of them, who say, oh, we did this 80s retro flashback thing. I honestly, whenever I hear that now, my eyes kind of roll. But Turbo Kid is the type of film that really, really gets it right.
It does get it right. You hit it right on the head, that Grindhouse, and we talked about that last week. Once Grindhouse came out, everybody was trying to go in the vein and go, oh, look at us, look at us. And then, you know, a lot of them, even when you get to remakes, they feel a little bit mean-spirited, like, ha-ha. But this one teeters right on that fine line of adding just enough humor in here so you know that they aren't trying to be completely serious, but at the same time, it's not just a shtick. Now, it's based off of T is for Turbo, which was submitted for the ABCs of Death, the first one. Hmm. And that's where the idea in this came from, and they ended up making a feature from it. And unlike some other films like this, I felt like it was more than just a one-trick pony. Glenn, wouldn't you agree that it's got more going on than just, oh, look, we're retro? They seem to get a lot trying to do an actual story here as well, don't they?
Absolutely. I think it's not just that they try to do an homage. I think they tried to make a good, you know, a good fun and interesting movie as well. I think there's a very good story. I think you've got some, especially with Apple, you have some great characters.
Yes, we will definitely get to Apple, but I want to talk about some of the other characters first, because I have a feeling that Apple, there'll be lots to say. But there are some great characters in here. We've mentioned, why don't we go first to our villain? I know we could talk about the hero first, but everybody talks about the hero first. Let's talk about our villain first, Zeus, Mr. Michael Ironside. Just how many different 80s villains, Paul, did he embody?
I know, but as I was watching it, I was like thinking to myself, who better to play Michael Ironside than Michael Ironside? That's what it felt like. Didn't it feel like it was him? Like, you know, he plays good guys well too, but he plays these bad guys like a certain way, and you just love him. He fills the room, you know, with his charisma, and I love the fact that, you know, he had that Zeus helmet on that he put on. And it just gave him that, you know, he just had this charisma about him. He's just a great villain. And I think only Michael Ironside could play Michael Ironside the way he does. I know it sounds silly, but it's so true.
That's absolutely true.
No, he was
bringing the same thing to that he was bringing to Dawn mentioned Space Hunter, which is like one of my favorites. I love that movie. And also he has like two different kinds of like, well, not two different kinds. He's a great actor. But anyway, we all seen the movie where we say, oh, he's doing this type of villain this time. So you see like when he would do you see a difference from like say Scanners to Space Hunter, that type of villain. And right. then he did that kind of villain in, I'd say, like Highlander 2, and if anybody saw Vampire Wars when that came out, that was like that. Yeah, I mean, like, so it was, oh, it's totally you hit the nail on the head, Paul. It's Ironside doing Ironside, and you know, quite well, and you know, without winking though.
Right.
Well, you know, he wasn't really winking at the camera and saying, check what I'm doing. He was really honestly saying, oh yeah, this is, I'm going to throw out this, you know, this type of performance again. And since there's, you know, probably not going to do too many more performances like mm-hmm. this in my lifetime, I'm just going to go for it.
And also, unlike a lot of the superhero movies now, he was evil. There was not very little redeeming about him.
Oh, you know, yeah, he was
just evil. And it was perfect.
Well, but he also had just a little tinge of a sense of humor to him, didn't he, Don? Especially with the, I love my, one of my favorite scenes is, folks, we have a hero in here eventually, Frederick. He's an arm wrestler named Frederick. I love that name for a hero. That's his name, right, Frederick?
Yeah, Frederick the arm wrestler.
Yeah. Frederick the arm wrestler. And so he takes on, yes, this is the name of the henchman, Skeletron, in an arm wrestling match. But before that, where I was going with this, is Zeus sets up this little bit more life or death type of arm wrestling match involving blender blades.
And fire.
And fire.
And he goes, not only blades, but fire. And he gets so dramatic. And the technician's hitting the button, and it's not enough flames. And he just goes, when I want fire, I want fire. It's a great scene because then you have your hero, Frederick, who pulls out a cigarette and goes, mind if I light this? And here Zeus is all enraged, and he just looks and he goes, oh, yeah, sure, go ahead. But at the same time, he's not being, like, good guy. He's still evil because in the very few seconds, yes, this is a spoiler room, and I did not expect this. Did you, Glenn? They actually cut off the one of our heroes' hands, like, 3 minutes after we meet him.
Yeah. That was a thing of beauty.
I did not expect that. I mean, and there's a number of moments, I think, in this film, wouldn't you say, Glenn, that where you think they're going to follow the trope or something, but then they throw just a little extra, you know, out of the whack to keep you on your toes, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, I liked how they did that, where they started going down a path, and you're sitting there going, I know where this is going. And then all of a sudden they say, nope, there's a tree right there that you just ran into. Because we just planned and grew that son of a bitch just to smack you in the face.
They do. They set some things up just so that you know you're going, oh, okay. But that's what I loved about this, and the big twist at the end. We talked about how Michael Ironside was playing Michael Ironside and a number of other villains, but that makeup, Scott, Terminator 2 all the way, would you say?
Oh yeah, yeah. He and you know where they had big. They had to do that. They had to say, we had to say, you know, we've seen, you know, and we've seen like kind of like the nice robot type things here. We've got to go and actually show like some actual like monster type of this, you know, and they did. So, I mean, yeah, absolutely. It's they did that. And yeah, just to, yeah. And of course, everybody who is just tuning in, of course, yes, this is the spoiler room. So every little twist.
Yes, we're gonna pick apart every little twist. What I loved even more though about the fact that he was a robot too, and that he had that evil Terminator look. But Paul, he was a corporate law enforcer. Yes. He wasn't even a soldier.
But who more evil than corporate?
Right, right. They're the most bloodthirsty bastards there are.
Which at least they didn't CGI him like Arnold in the new one. But,
yeah. Oh, yeah, he looked a lot better than Arnold.
Looked a lot better. Yes.
The makeup looked better than the makeup looked better than Arnold's actual skin.
But well, that's what I liked though about that. With I mean, that was a classic example. But throughout, the one thing this film never did was stray away from that 80s vibe. You know, when you're watching it, never once does it lean towards or do something, I think, you know, more modern, except, well, I know, I think Glenn made a mention a little bit with a few of the special effects, but outside of that, Glenn, would you say that it keeps that tone of being an 80s film, even though some of the special effects were a little bit cleaner than you liked?
Yeah, I think it definitely keeps that tone. I mean, the post-apocalypse film really saw, you know, the, I mean, you had a few before the 80s, but the 80s were like, you know, that was the generation of the post-apocalyptic film for the most part, when you had so many that came out. And a lot of them were, I mean, for every Mad Max, there were, 15 Rollerblade Warriors. So
I'm a glutton for punishment. I love it.
I own three of them on some form of media.
But they don't stray away from the tone like some of the more modern quote-unquote homage films.
No, I think they stay true to form throughout the whole film.
Mm-hmm. And it's like one of you, I'm not sure who said it before, though, that like Ironside wasn't winking at himself. It never really, they put details in here, which is what I want to talk about next, is some of the details they put in here, especially for your sci-fi lovers. But one of the things I liked is I never got the feeling like it was really hard winking at you, like, It was trying to be its own film, you know, to where it was the audience is, it's like, we know what audience is going to watch this. We don't have to wink at you saying, look at what we're doing. But at the same time, they throw in a lot of references and a lot of attention to detail. I mean, we'll get now to the kid who's Turbo Kid. He doesn't come Turbo Kid yet, but he likes comics and that. But he has the signature 80s type of collection that you want from your post-apocalyptic kid, doesn't he, Don?
Oh yeah, he's got your he's got your Walkman. He's chewing bubble gum. He's putting posters up. He's got action figures. He's wearing rainbow bright arm elbow pads and knee pads. That was detail I loved.
And it's in the trivia too, and I caught it, even though I don't know French, but I figured it was some kind of reference.
Uh-huh.
The cereal that he eats is French for, I believe, Soylent Green.
Yep.
Which leads us to the other thing that our Batman, main bad guy, reason he's in such power is he controls a machine that extracts water. And what does it extract water from, Paul?
People! It's made of people!
Turbo Kid even dropped the line of, the water's made of people.
Exactly.
Damn you, Dasani, damn you to hell.
But I never felt like they did that on purpose, the way it was directed and handled, the way those lines were handled. Scott, would you say it never felt like they were slapping you in the face like, look, here's a reference?
No, like I was mentioning Astron 6 before, their films, they stop being even send-ups that they claim to be, and they start going out into all-out spoofs. And there's other ones where they'll just, where, hey, look, we threw in a scene-missing title card, you know? Like, it's like, you know, people who don't even really, it's like they either don't have a very good memory of their of what they're sending up, or they don't, or they've actually never seen one. This one, it'll have lots of clever humor, some of which is centered around the fact that it's retro and sci-fi, and some of it just trying to be fun. And yeah. Then, but it will never ever like just be like shaking you, saying it's a joke, it's funny, laugh at it. You know, they'll never do that. It's one of those things where on another podcast, we were talking about The Howling recently.
Right.
Not this show, another show that you guys can all like try to track down.
Astro Radio Z.
Astro Radio Z. Yeah, let's name it. Why not? Give some publicity. And we were talking about the movie The Howling. You know. Right. And in Dante's original, he didn't like beat you over the head with the humor. He'd have like clever little. Asides to humor, like showing a copy of Howl on someone's, nightstand table and stuff. And this is kind of similar in vein to, like, what a, if Joe Dante was, like, a hungry 25-year-old filmmaker today, he would have come up with something like Turbo Kid, probably. You know, and it's that same type of clever send-up where it's like, we're going on this journey with you. We're kind of taking you along. We've got jokes there, but you can see it's funny. We hope you enjoy it, but we're also telling a story.
Yeah, but they don't slap you in the face with the big fish joke saying,
no!
Hey,
no.
Look, and I loved that because so many homage films, I think, miss that point and they put the reference and the way they direct it, it's all leading the focus directly to it. And here, you've got the Pink Flamingos, which, if you come from the 80s, you recognize that. And the soundtrack was so 80s. Paul, how about that soundtrack, especially in the beginning where he listens to the tune and then he puts the tape deck in and is listening to the exact same song? What'd you think about that?
I thought that was a lovely technique. It was just beautiful. And all throughout the movie, you get to hear that same music. And like I said, this is about my childhood. This is an homage to it, including the helmet that he wears. Because you guys ever play a video game called Commander Keen?
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
That's what his helmet
was. His little Packer helmet.
Yeah, his little Packer helmet. But, I mean, it had this stripe down the middle, and I looked at the kids striped down the middle, and I thought, oh, my God. And the music, again, fabulous, especially it's got this synthesizer sound to it.
Synthwave music was great.
It felt like John Hammer was doing the music in the background.
It's on Steam.
What, Glenn?
Commander Keen is on Steam.
Yeah. Yes, it is. It is on Steam. But, yeah, and that was the thing with the music even. The music, it was subtle without hitting you over the head going, we're doing 80s music. I mean –
And it was definitely a sci-fi type of sound too. It wasn't like a 90s kind of we're trying to do 80s. It was actually felt like an 80s song.
Yeah, and we don't just get the references with Turbo Kid's abode, if you will, his bunker full of references. We have a villain in here, and Glenn, tell me he wasn't influenced by Big Trouble in Little China. The guy with the hat, the straw hat biker.
Oh, gosh, yeah. Of course he was.
I loved him. There was another one where it was unexpected, wasn't it, Glenn? We get a bad guy in here who kidnaps Apple, who's a girl that our Turbo Kid's kind of befriended, and he kidnaps him, but that guy doesn't last too long, does he?
He does not.
No.
I'm trying to remember. I should have rewatched this recently. I'm trying to remember.
Yeah, me too.
I watched it like 3 weeks ago, but it was in a block of like five movies straight when I was off.
Well, it was with the straw hat guy who definitely looks like a guy from Big Trouble Little China is chasing him down after he nets Apple, and it's right after Turbo Kid finds that the Turbo Rider is an actual guy and he's got an actual suit with an actual glove. And then he confronts the straw hat guy, but that's all within the span of like 5 minutes.
Yeah, if that.
And that's what I love is that it doesn't take too long to set up what they want you to get, it's like here, and then that glove, Don, power glove. Tell me that was not influenced.
God.
That wasn't influenced by the power glove at all for Nintendo, was it?
Not at all. Holy cow.
I want that glove, though. I thought that was a pretty interesting weapon that they designed there for it, that he makes people explode with it. And we get the little LED display for recharging, but Paul, the hearts for Apple, who we'll talk about in a minute. Apple is a robot, and it's a robot friend, and we'll talk about her in a minute. But she's got this arm thing where she shows her hearts. Did you notice what the icons look like?
Yes, Legend of Zelda. I used to play that game all the time. I loved it. And it even to the point where they did half hearts.
They did half hearts.
That was perfect.
You know, just so many references in here. And there's a Zeus has this pool where he has people do gladiator fights, folks.
Pool party.
And that's where he takes pieces and throws them in his machine to make water. And he has three gladiators who, Scott, did they embody pretty much all your horror? I mean, they even work horror reference in here, don't they?
Yeah, they work all these references out without switching the genre of the movie. They actually throw it in there. But if you looked at those people, you're like, yeah, I could see them. I mean, they were like the horror version pro wrestling nightmare. You know, Leatherface after the apocalypse, that whole thing going on, absolutely. And of course, they were like roided out and just these awful, awful people. And of course, the great part about that scene, we know, and I know we're going to talk about her in a bit, is just to have this cute little thing, just like them get beat down by this cute little thing. I mean, violently beat down.
Violently. And yes, the cute little thing, we'll talk about her now, the cute little thing is Apple, who, for me, folks, I could watch this whole movie with just her, just about. It's like they wrote this character, and then they wrote the film around this character. Glenn Apple, your feelings with her, the robot friend of Turbo Kid.
Oh my God, I loved Apple. Just everything about her, just her innocence was, who's the actor? I should have looked this up. The actress.
Lawrence.
Yeah, oh my God, she was so good in this. I mean, she is the standout performance, I think, of the movie.
I can completely agree. Would you, Dawn, that she shines even above the veteran, you know, all the other actors and stuff we have in here? She just stands out.
Absolutely. Her timing was perfect. She was, at the beginning he had accepted that she was going to be following him around, and she was all smiles and enthusiasm, but it was just slightly off-key enough to let you know that there's something really wrong with her, but in kind of an awesome way.
Mm-hmm.
It was... Yeah.
Well, her friend that she had before she met him...
Well, was dead.
Yeah.
Well, not just dead, but apparently long dead.
Well, he had been there for a while, which surprised me. Which makes you wonder how long she was sitting in that playground. And she kind of appears out of nowhere, but I mean that guy was decomposed for quite some time. So, she's a great character when you first introduce her, and it doesn't even matter that she's a robot or not. Though it adds an extra element for the last half of the film, but that first half, you meet her and she's. She is so different than the rest of the world, isn't she, Paul?
Oh, like, definitely.
I mean, but she's not completely devoid. She's not unaware of the way the world is.
Exactly, and that was very obvious at the end. Spoiler, she sacrifices herself, and that was an important part of the thing because as you're seeing that character kind of develop and build a friendship with Monroe's character – she really, you start to see that she is changing, that she's becoming more and more human. And I thought that was a hugely important. And I love the fact that you did have a character that everybody seemed like they were depressed in this world. And you had this super happy person that came from the wastelands. And it helped the film a lot. And actually, her introduction is when the movie started to become interesting for me.
Well, I think it does for a lot of people because you get that extra element, because up until that point, and that's like the first real spin, because up until that point you're like, okay, this is kind of following the beats of an apocalypse film, and then you get her.
Yes.
And she's just so different from what we've seen from any of these other type of films. Wouldn't you say, Scott? I don't think in an apocalypse film we've really had a character like this ever.
No. I mean, you would get if you went back to like the actual like Road Warrior ripoffs and stuff from the 80s and stuff, you either had no character like this, or if they felt like we have to have a character that represents kind of like the antidote to this awful world, or as Glenn mentioned, the innocence and stuff. I mean, if they had to do that, they'd say, okay, we're going to throw in like a young girl, but she won't be like this. She'll be like a normal person, or they'll throw in a kid or something like that. This is just the complete like pixie. She's a warrior. She is a warrior, which is what is so funny, because you don't expect it. You think, oh man, she's going to get eaten alive, and she can bring it. And she has this enthusiasm and warmth and fun about her where, I mean, it's the irony of the film is that she's the one character that you could really never say is like, technically she's not a living creature, but she's the only one who really lives.
Right.
In the whole movie. And she's fantastic. I mean, I'm going to tell you guys right now, my best of 2015 list is always late. It always gets published like first week of February, because that's just how long it takes me to get there. And this movie's on the list. And not only is this movie on the list, Apple is my favorite character from any movie from 2015. Wow. Of any movie. And I'm talking like high drama, anything. She's my favorite character. I thought she was fantastic. Lawrence LeBeouf brings dignity back to that last name.
It's spelled different. Anything
else. She's fantastic, though. She has like this, because she has this. She plays it so perfectly. If she did not play this part so well, this part could have been really. This could have been a really annoying character. This could have been a grating character. It could have been. It could have been somebody that you didn't quite buy, or it went too far in one way. But like Dawn mentioned, there's always something a little off about her. There's like a freeze frame about her where she's not just smiling. She's got like these wide eyes that should, I mean, you'd swear there was like a Tex Avery effect going on. I mean, they're so wide, like just this great like psycho look and stuff. And she is the most lovable and wonderful character. I do have to say that, and again, guys, if you haven't caught on, the show is called Spoiler Room. that with that ending that we were mentioning about like what happened, that was the one part was like, oh. So that I do really hope that if they do a sequel to Turbo Kid, they somehow bring her back.
I hope not.
No. I hope that's my thing. That's exactly my joke. Is that they could have a chip with her, bring her back, put her. There's your joke right there. You call her Apple II, you know.
Or Macintosh. Upgrade.
That'd be a guy. Would be Macintosh.
That would be awesome. But,
yeah.
Now see, for me, I especially at the end when they started to, you know, when she started to become more human, like you had mentioned, I went to a Cherry 2000 place and went, no, not a sex bot.
Oh, no.
Oh, no, really?
So I was really glad when that whole train derailed.
Yeah.
Oh, you thought maybe it was going to be a love thing?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was kind of heading there. And like Biff said, when you start going down a path, they pop a tree right up and you hit it, and that was one of them that I was really glad to see. They derailed that storyline right away.
Yeah.
But yeah. I don't think that she could come back because of how they ended it with the star.
Yep.
I know, but you know, I just
you just want her back.
This is a character that really worked its way into, her way into my heart.
Aww.
I'm serious. I swear, she's like just like the most lovable person in this movie.
It's the performance. It's the performance.
It really is.
Lawrence.
She's so good. that I was looking up other films and TV work that she had done after I'd seen the movie, and I'd saw some of the stuff, and she's really great in the other film, in the other work that I saw. It was still hard to get used to it, though, because a lot of her roles have been so much darker.
Sure.
And like where she actually, this is a, where they're like, she's a human character who goes through tragedy, and it was hard to separate, like, okay, to separate that actress from that previous role, to feel, so you're not like saying, okay, it's not Apple, but she's just, just has a really good range.
I was just kicking myself by the name. She's a robot. Her name is Apple, and when it's she really was revealed 80s. That she, you know, she was a robot, I slapped my forehead going, oh my God, I could, why? Dad,
I was there.
Who else slapped their heads? Please tell me I wasn't the only one.
I did not.
Of course you guys didn't.
I've tried not to hurt myself too much, you know.
But I did. I slapped myself, and yeah, I mean, there's so much about that character to love, and the fact that, yeah, she's a friendship bot, and as we mentioned, she's not totally clueless the way the world works, and in fact, I think she's programmed to adapt really well, because our Turbo Kid comes up with these sets of rules for surviving the wasteland, which I think he stole from Glenn, who lives out in the wasteland, for the B-movie bunker. Check it out. And but he makes her a weapon. Dawn, what weapon? What, I want to ask you, because I know it was one of your favorite parts. What weapon does he make Apple?
Oh, gosh. He, what was that, a cricket? A cricket?
Yeah, it's a broken stick, cricket bat, yeah.
Broken cricket bat with a gnome tape to it. And she holds up and says, this is my gnome stick, and she's just running around and beating up air, and it's awesome.
It's such an adorable moment, because she gets so violent, and even with her swinging stuff around, she's just fantastic. You're just like, oh my God, that's awesome.
And she seems so genuinely thrilled and enthusiastic about it, and this is like, somebody just gave me the best thing in the whole world. It's like chocolate and coffee and happiness and puppy. Oh my goodness.
Yeah. It's so fluffy.
Yes, it's just like that. It's so fluffy, I'm gonna die.
But exactly, it's a gnome like stick, and it's like a great weapon of a garden gnome duct taped to a broken cricket bat. And she's not afraid to use it, because we get that pool scene, as we mentioned before, folks, where our hero Turbo Kid and Apple meet up with Frederick, the now one-armed arm wrestler, or one-hand arm wrestler.
Well, now he truly is an arm wrestler.
Arm wrestler, yes.
An arm wrestler.
And they work on their plan. They're like, okay, you go take care of it. She just goes running off with the gnome stick and starts beating the shit out of the
one. She's following orders.
Sir, yes, sir. Because that's the thing I was saying, mentioning before. Like, you just think she's going to get her ass handed to her. Oh, she's. Then you think, no, she has to. This person has to have survived somehow. She goes, sir, yes, sir, and just kicks the shit out of him.
But have you ever gotten hit by a lawn gnome? Those things hurt.
He speaks from experience.
Yes.
And it's like, you know, and it's like, yes. And, you know, it's the thing is that, and she remembered at a later date, she teaches a Turbo Kid defense techniques.
Yes. Oh, God.
Quite aggressively, though, I might add.
Glenn, do you remember what 3 points she makes for fighting someone?
Oh, my gosh.
Put you on the spot. Do you remember? It was eyes, throat,
testicles.
Yeah, testicles, yes.
To which it comes up later on. He does use that technique.
Viciously
with a sword. Oh. Which leads us, as much as I could just talk about Apple all night, which leads us to the gore, though, within this film. I will say that I was surprised by just the sheer volume of gore and the 2,000 pounds per second blood pressure that everyone had. Paul, what'd you think of the gore?
See, because remember I said that this was an homage to my childhood. This is not. The gore part was the thing that threw me out of it because, of course, my childhood never had that much.
No. Yes. you didn't.
And I'm not a big fan of intense gore, but I understood why it needed to be in this film. It was meant to be laughed at, not to be,
Well, and when you get a villain like Skeletron, which is a great name, a combination of a couple of villains from the 80s, who has saw blades he launches from a launcher on his hand.
I come in peace.
Yes! That's exactly what I thought. So I'm not the only one that got the Dark Angel I come in peace vibe or the Predator vibe.
Yeah. I noticed that myself, yeah.
But the gore, I thought it looked good, though. It
looked good, yes.
Lots of practical effects, and there's lots of good makeup.
There was. And in fact, so good practical effects that, Glenn, when you do get a little CGI, it was more noticeable, wasn't it?
It was. That's my one biggest criticism of the movie, is that the practical effects were so good. When you do get CG, it really, really sticks out.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, really, in some ways, really badly.
Right.
Apple IIe.
Yeah.
Jesus.
But, I mean, it wasn't enough to, wreck the movie for me. So.
No, I mean, you're into the movie. That everybody else is so good, especially Apple, that you're so into it.
We love you, Apple!
The kid was good too.
They're all good.
Everybody was good in here. Even though we did focus on Apple, everybody does well in here. Turbo Kid too. He's a survivor though too, because he's survived this long. He's an older kid. He lost his parents when he was young to our villain, which I love that tie together that they did.
Yes. Very Conan-esque.
Yes, it was very Conan-esque. But it was funny because when I watched Star Wars The Force Awakens, which we did on a spoiler room a little while back, check it out, I got the feeling when she was doing the scavenging and she was taking it to the outpost, I'm like, was someone watching Turbo Kid? It felt almost exactly the same, didn't it, Dawn?
A little bit. A little bit.
And it made me wonder, did they kind of copy that in Force Awakens? Because down to the portions, and what she was dealing. And I'm just like, wow, this has all the feelings of Turbo Kid. Way to go, JJ. Now, granted, I know that stereotype wasteland trading post, but still, that just had a really interesting feeling that when I watched Star Wars that, wow, that's the Turbo Kid trading scene right there. We just need the arm wrestling going on.
Yeah. definitely liked Bagu better than the.
Bagu was an interesting character because that's another character that was unexpected, wasn't it, Dawn? Of how he was when you first see him versus when we see him later on.
Yeah, you got this. You got this. Character who almost seems worldly and very entrenched in controlling the items that come in and out, the scavenged items that come in and out, and then, later on you find out that he's a big old coward running away.
Well, not only that, but he does like his girly things. Which is funny because in the beginning, the Turbo Kid gives him that pen with the stripper pen where you tip it on, just from the 80s where you had a water pen that you tilt it in one way and the lady removes her clothes and you're like, okay. But then later on, what does he help trade information with? The headband that Apple was wearing, the pink and blue with little charms on it, is what they trade him information for. I did not expect that at all. Did you, Paul?
I did not know, but it was a good thing for his character. It added a dimension.
Well, not only did it add a dimension, but that was another just prime example of the way they directed this film. you don't see everything about the characters right away.
Exactly.
You know, or you've got stuff in the background, like Zeus. We've got our villain Zeus. Where he has the pool is Olympus.
Yes.
The company's name is Olympus. It's written on the side of the building, and if you're not paying attention, you'll miss it. But he actually, his base is Olympus.
And unlike like Mad Max, where you had all these cars and these junk things, everybody had a bike. Actually made sense.
Yeah,
you didn't have to worry about gas.
No, so everybody has bicycles. She comes out at the end, of course, with the unicorn strap to it, which was like actually my picture on Facebook for like the longest time. And oh my God, you just mentioned bikes. Of course, that brings me. We were talking about gore.
Sure.
That amazing sequence with like the exercise bike or whatever.
Oh yes. Folks, our villains capture our traitor who we were just talking about. They managed to catch up with him and they want to pump him for information, so to speak. And so
out of him.
they hook up a bicycle with a chain to his intestine.
Yep.
Not a fan. Not a fan.
That's an awesome
scene. Glenn, what'd you think about that? I mean, we've watched, I think all of us have watched horror films, plenty of, and that was unexpected.
Unexpected, but glorious.
Yeah, oh, that was
absolutely
awesome.
Glorious.
Glorious.
that as well.
Glorious, yes. Glorious. Nice, Paul. But, I mean, come on, Paul, you watch horror all the time for your, you know, website.
Yes, but I like the supernatural horror. I like the things that make you scared. Just the having gore and guts and blood spewing out in fountains that look like, you know, Tarantino made the film type of thing. That sort of just like,
Yeah, but come on, you've watched enough horror films. I had to sit there and go back through thinking, going, I don't think I've ever seen someone hook up a small intestine to a bike wheel before and pedal the intestine out of the person.
But then he actually goes and says, at the end, you're going to help me put this back.
Oh, my God. You're going to help me put this back in, right?
And then they just keep going. It's like,
Well, because Ironside, he does that little speech after our event. You know, he gives them the information they wanted. He's like, oh, we went through all this trouble setting this up.
Exactly. See? He's evil. Unlike all villains, he's evil for real.
He is evil all the way through to the end. And then we had that other gore in the end with the fight scene, too, with the human totem pole.
Oh, God!
Paul's loving this. Don, our human totem pole made up of halves of people was just...
Welcome to trauma.
It was
trauma-esque. I was thinking classic Peter Jackson.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah, Dead Alive.
Yes, Dead Alive, you're right.
I could see both, actually.
Mm-hmm. Oh, God, I thought it was brilliant and wonderful. That was hilarious.
Chris, Don, you and I are the two people laughing during Green Inferno, too.
Oh, my God.
I just remember that to this day. We're the only two going, oh, my God, look, they just smashed his head in and ripped his eye out and ate it. Oh, my God.
Oh, my God.
And it was just like this, too. Oh, Don and I, she watched it at my house after, because I watched it the first time, I think, and then I invited you over, didn't I, Don? So you got to watch this.
Yep. And we had Sheldon and Jill, too.
Yes, we had Sheldon and Jill, too, and we're watching it. Her and I just crack it up when the halves of bodies are flying and landing on top of people, and he's walking around like this human severed totem pole just walking around.
And, well, they don't even make it.
And they keep popping from one person to the other, making a bigger and bigger totem pole.
God.
And yes, it is ridiculous, but by that point in the film, they could get away with it.
Yes.
Because of the way the whole film builds up, which I think beautifully, in that they ease you into this world. And Glenn, wouldn't you say they ease you into the world enough to where you, when you get to those moments at the end, you buy into it. You're already vested into the film, and you're like, okay, I can go with it. Versus going, man, is that really ridiculous? Because of the way they edit the rest of the film up to that point.
It's still ridiculous, but the world itself is kind of ridiculous. So, I mean, and there's a ridiculousness in general when it comes to most post-apocalyptic movies.
Sure.
You know, the whole, I mean, especially when you get the such over-the-top villains.
Mm-hmm.
But it's established early enough where you're like, yep, that's just how it is. You accept that.
Yeah, and I think many of the homage films or even modern post-apocalyptic films have trouble setting that up to where, you know, you don't really question anymore what's going on. You're just going, oh, that's just the way it is. Okay. You know, someone gets stabbed with a saw blade and their blood gushes out like Kill Bill. Okay. That's where we're at. there's just so many great things about Turbo Kid and that direction of this film. I thought it was handled very well throughout. At no point in this film does it get slow, does it, Scotty D? It clips along nicely.
It clips along really nicely. It, you know, and it'll have its respites, but because the characters, especially the characters of the kid and Apple, and the chemistry those two have with one another, is so good that even the respites don't really feel like, okay, now we're kind of settling down for a while. I mean, mm-hmm. And you guys were just talking about easing you into the film. I mean, the film by the end it does get quite ludicrous, but it does it so gradually. I have a friend who explained like the problem with like Michael Bay movies, for instance, where like if you're watching a Transformers movie, you see like a huge explosions, like you're on your third gigantic explosion 20 minutes into the movie, and those movies are 2.5 hours long. Well, by the time you're like an hour into the movie, you've seen it all, and so you don't really care anymore, you know, even if the rest of the film wasn't a piece of shit, what they usually are. But this one, it eases you in, so like, you know, you get it bit by bit by bit, like when he first gets that glove, then boom, like, oh my god, okay, we're going to that level now. And then you get the arena fight, and like, oh my god, we're going to that level now. And you know, it all kind of goes like that. And it has that escalation of really taking you through on an escalation that way. You have a storyline where you're getting to know the characters better. And there really isn't down spots in the movie. There's no dull moments or anything like that where they say, okay, this is just padding to get it to 90 minutes, you know? It really tells, for something that originated as a short, this tells a complete full story.
Yeah, and I like that you mentioned that because, Paul, wouldn't you agree with that? And I just was thinking about this when Scott said it, is that every scene, unlike some movies where you go, well, that scene was interesting, but we don't really need it, every scene in this either advances the plot or grows the character. I don't think there's a wasted scene in here, do you, Paul?
I don't really. Yeah, I agree with everyone. I agree with Scott. I agree with you on this.
Yeah. It feels like they did not waste time. It's like, here we either grow a relationship between Apple and our, you know, and Turbo Kid. We get either, you know, learn more about our evil guy. We learn more about Frederick, the one-armed arm wrestler who
gets a brother.
Who has a brother who dies, which puts him in there. But I mean, boom, that's it. He has a brother in an arena who dies. Boom, there's the connection. I just loved how they went like that. They took it enough to the audience, which is what I guess what I want to talk about last, is this film, unlike some homage films, and we've kind of hinted at it before, is it giving the audience credit. Wouldn't you say, Glenn, it gives you the audience not a presuming that we have to explain everything, but, you know, they know who they're showing this to, don't they?
Oh, yeah. It's nice not to trying to think of the best term. I don't want to say pandered. Pander's not the right term.
Handheld.
That's the word. Yeah. Handheld through. Because especially a movie that is made for a very specific audience.
Mm-hmm.
This was not made for, you know, a broad mainstream audience. It wasn't. I mean, and it was made for a specific niche. And that niche does not need their handheld throughout things. we're smart enough we can figure shit out. and if we can't, we're smart enough to use the internet to find out what something meant.
Right, yeah, exactly. I mean, if you need a reference at all, we know to go to the internet, but we don't need the film to show us or explain everything at all. You know, I mean, we don't get into an explanation, a deep explanation of how robots work, do we, Dawn? We know that she's malfunctioning and she needs this part. That's it. We don't go like, you know, well, she needs this to survive or whatnot. She just gives a name and goes with it.
Yep. Very simple, very basic. It's very much like was said earlier. We don't need. We just accept this is the world we're in. This is what's happening. You don't need to do more. You just kind of accept what's going on and going with the flow.
Just even with the sidekick, Skeletron, we don't get a backstory. Why does he wear the mask, or how did he meet up? We don't get that. When we get in a flashback, we see he's always been with Zeus, as far as we can tell. And who is he? Who knows? He's a crazy guy with a metal mask who people seem to prone to hit in the face,
of course,
of the fight. I love that bit of humor where people kept hitting him, and I'm just like, he's got the mask on. Why are you hitting him? But we don't get a backstory with him. I mean, we do get with the kid, but even the flashback wasn't just to give you a backstory. It's to show you the connection he has with Zeus and how Zeus got his one eye. all that mask that Zeus wears, that copper mask, didn't that remind you of who is it?
Zardoz?
Huh? Zardoz, I think, yes. Yeah. It reminded me of Zardoz. Thank you, Don. I just wanted to mention that quick, because every time he wore it, I'm like, oh my God. So, yeah, Turbo Kid, folks, if you're a fan of post-apocalyptic films from the 80s, because the whole film takes place in 1995, too, which I love.
97.
Or 97, excuse me. I'm sorry, 97. I had my years off. 97. I love that bit, too. The future of 1997.
Were you ever one of those people when you were... Because, I mean, this movie does bring you back to when you would watch these movies as a kid, which was usually on either on cable or on VHS. Mm-hmm. They don't do it as much anymore, but they always did it back then when they would always talk about the future year and they would put up a year. Even as a kid, I was always thinking, now why are you going to put up that year? Because when
it comes around,
get that year and that shit hasn't happened. You know, and there's lots of movies like that. I mean,
Back to the Future.
We've got everything from good movies to bad movies. We've got everything from 2001 A Space Odyssey all the way to 1990 The Bronx Warriors. I mean, and now if you lived near the Bronx in the early 80s, you looked at that and said, that's actually pretty close. But neither one came true, you know, which we could kind of think of. You know, all of the great movies, you know, like Escape from New York all the way to like Roger Corman B-flicks. And so I always wondered why you put the thing up there. I mean, I still loved things like Mad Max when they weren't specific, or even better, Max Headroom.
Oh, God, yes.
20 minutes into the future. Yes. And, you know, as a kid, you're like, well, this isn't going to happen in 20 minutes. And then, you kind of learn to smarten up in a hurry, like, no, duh, it's a... It's a joke. It's aimed at someone that's more than 10 years old, Scott.
Same thing here. They put in the 1997 specifically because of that trend.
That reminded me of that. Like, it's the thing to say, like, yeah, if you discovered a VHS called Turbo Kid and you didn't know better, you'd think like, wow, they dated their film right away.
But we're going to wrap it up here for the night. So, folks, if we haven't wet your whistle and ruined it enough already, seek out Turbo Kid if you are a retro 80s, if you're a post-apocalyptic fan, if you're looking for an homage film done right, done well, with lots of great sci-fi references, fantastic performances by everybody, not just the Apple character, but everybody in here who owns to this the roles they're in, recognize what film they're in, but at the same time, they're not hard winking at the audience either. They're making a legitimate film that would have been released in the 80s, and you can totally see it fitting that era. So check it out. And now we're going to go right down the line real quick where people can pimp their stuff. Don, go ahead. Where can they find you?
You can find me in theaudience.net.
Fantastic. And Glenn?
You can find me on YouTube, Beanie Bunker, Naked Home Productions, on Facebook, or just follow me on Twitter at Naked Hobo.
Fantastic. And Paul?
You can catch me on Facebook, Twitter, and WordPress at ForsakenFilmReviews.com.
Fantastic. And Scotty D.
I have my web series, Movieocrity, all about exploitation cinema. That's at vimeo.com/channels/movieocrity. You can also check out that show, plus all the articles I write and anything else, any other projects I have coming up, like podcasts or anything, at movieocrity.com. I might be having a few new projects in the works for 2016, so be sure to check those out.
Like an Apple appreciation.
The Apple Appreciation Society is what's going to be, yes.
Apple. I think that's what we have here tonight is the Apple Appreciation Society. And if you want to catch any other episodes of the Spoiler Room, please check us out on iTunes, rate us, give us a comment. Love to hear your thoughts. And it's how you get us noticed is by rating and liking us there on iTunes, or you can go to specialmarkproductions.com where you can find all my stuff and the Spoiler Room podcast archive. This is number 76, if you can believe it. We have many of our episodes there, including the one we just did last week, which was Ripoff versus Homage. And next week is going to be another special Big 4-0 where we're going to talk about Assault on Precinct 13. So check out all that stuff, specialmarkproductions.com. Follow us on the Twitters, at MovieManiac3D, or at Spoiler Room, P as in Paul, D as in David, C as in Cat, S as in Sam. That's Spoiler Room, PDCS, on the Twitter as well. I want to thank our crew for talking tonight about this fun film. Hope you've enjoyed the discussion. And remember, in the Spoiler Room, the conversation is fresh, but we do spoil the movies. Say goodnight, everyone.
Goodnight, everyone.
Goodnight, everyone.